Okay, we're in Parshas Kiseitze, page 1060. Perchov Dalid, Pasik Yudalid, chapter 24, Pasik 14. Okay, page 1060, in the middle of the page. The Torah says like this. Before we were talking about not taking collateral securities from somebody's house, you have to wait outside, and you can't take it from a widow. We're not done with that yet, but the Torah says like this. Leisashik Sochit Ani Ve'evyin. You cannot cheat a poor man or a destitute hired person amongst your brothers. This pasuk says, basically, this is teaching us a law that we learned already, and Rashi comments why we have it twice, that you're not allowed to withhold payment of a worker. Why does the pasuk say here, poor man? Because usually the poor men are the ones that were the laborers that hired themselves out. But it then applies whether somebody is rich and rich and poor, and the Torah says what it means. Or, by the way, whether it's from your brothers, or from the converts who are living in your land and your gates. What does it mean? You have to pay him the day he finished working. Which means, and this is the halacha, by the way, the reason why it's not done today, we'll discuss in a few minutes why it's not done today, because that's basically the way it's accepted, that you don't pay daily. We're talking about workers that used to work a day, they got paid at the end of the day, and then the next day they worked, you know, whatever it was.
They went to the market and picked up something.
Whatever, yeah. So it says, and the reason for this, the Chacham explained, because the guy needs to go home and feed his family. If you're not going to pay him until tomorrow, his family is going to be hungry tonight. So what are they going to eat? So the Torah says, and this is what it means, leisashik. We're not talking about not paying the worker. That's stealing. But even though, like Rashi says, it already says, leisashik esriyacha, the pasuk vayikra already says, don't do this. So Rashi says, it's from the Gemara to take a person to get two sins. That if you do this to a person, you get two sins. One from vayikra and one from dvarim. Okay? So you evened out the class, by the way. Leisashik is riacha, and one is for the poor, one is for the wealthy. But it says an interesting expression. It says,
cheats.
Literally means to cheat, but it doesn't mean cheating. It means actually not paying the guy in time. Mm-hmm. Okay? You're now to withhold payment. Here the Torah says that you need, especially, the Gemara says like this, especially people that are poor, God gets angrier when you don't pay them than if the guy has money. Because they need, in fact, it's an interesting story. There's a whole question in halacha, you know, you buy a lulav and esrog, it has to be yours. So according to many opinions, you need to pay for it before Yom Tov. Because then you pay for it, so it becomes yours. So the previous Rebbe, before the Rebbe became Rebbe, the previous Rebbe would buy the lulav and esrog for the Rebbe also. He bought for his children and in-laws. So the Rebbe wanted that his father-in-law should pay before Yom Tov. They bought it from a big chassid, his name was Rabbi Jacobson. So the Rebbe asked if he's going to be paying before, he asked his father-in-law if he's going to be paying. So the previous Rebbe said, Rabbi Jacobson doesn't need the money before Yom Tov, it's okay. No, because he wanted to prove a point that you don't necessarily have to pay for it before Yom Tov, it's considered yours anyway. So there is a mitzvah in the Torah, you have to pay a worker the day he finishes working. By the way, which would apply like this, if you pay somebody weekly, today you don't pay daily. I mean, most of the time. You don't pay daily. So if you pay weekly, then the din is, you have to pay at the end of the week. If you pay monthly, you have to pay at the end of the month. Bottom line is the Torah says you cannot hold back payment from the worker when he's supposed to be getting paid. Especially if it's a poor person. Okay? Now the Torah uses the expression here, ani and pasi yudalid. Ani and evyain. Seemingly both are poor. Ani is poor and evyain is
destitute.
Oh, so it says, Rashi explains just in Hebrew, ani means somebody who's poor. Evyain, where does the word evyain come from? Ta'ev l'chol davar. He wants anything. He has so nothing. Whatever there is to be able to give him, you want. So Evyon, in Lashon Kodesh, in Torah, means a person who's poorer than poor. You have, in Hebrew, you have Ani, Rosh, Reishin is a poor man, Evyon. The lowest level of a poor man in Hebrew is Evyon. Because he wants anything. Rashi says, Toiv l'chol davar. Meaning, no matter what you give him, he wants. He has nothing.
Piece of bread.
So the Torah says, whether he's an Ani or an Evyon, or like we said before, the fact that in Vayikra, the Torah says it just plain, applies to rich men also. Okay, you have to give him this, V'leitavei olav ha-shemesh. It has to be, you have to, the sun shall not set for him, meaning you have to pay him before sundown. Ki ani hu, because he's poor. The elav hu neisei yasnafshei. And his life depends on you. In other words, V'leikadei alecha l'Hashem, that he shouldn't cry out to Hashem. V'hoya b'chocheit, and you'll have a sin by not giving it to him.
What's disconcerting is that it explicitly names Jews, but not
no anybody.
Not Gentile. It excludes Gentiles.
Me'achecha is from your brothers. The sin applies only to Jews because they're your brothers. So you have to make sure your brother has what to eat. But conceptually, it works to anything.
Excuse me. Can we repeat where we're starting?
I just said you're not allowed to withhold payment. If a guy works at the day, he needs to get paid at the end of the day, you have to get him paid by the end of the day. You cannot push it off. Okay, now, not only that, he says the worker in those days was basically agriculture. So the guys would climb up on the trees, you know, pick fruits. That's the work that they did, the day workers. So it says the guy risked his life by climbing in a tree. Didn't have the sophisticated ways of doing it like we have today. He used to climb up on a tree. It was dangerous. And that's why it says, the mefarshim, who elav unaysei esnafshei. Simply means he's depending on you. But some mefarshim learn, who unaysei esnafshei means he's actually risking his life working for you. So at least what you could do is pay him on time. Or he's going on a roof to do things. Yes, because he's endangering his life, that you need to make sure you do it on time. Now, this din, that you're transgressing a negative commandment.
Unless you have a contract saying I'll pay you
a. No, we said that. If you pay weekly, so it's weekly. But what happens if the boss just doesn't have the money to pay him? Not that he has the money, he doesn't want to pay him. He just can't pay him, he doesn't have the money. So then the Gemara says, you don't transgress this prohibition. The prohibition of transgressing a negative commandment of not paying the worker, you only transgress biblically if you had the money to pay him and you don't pay them. But if you have no money, then it's a different story. In fact, there's a famous story in the Gemara. A guy worked as a teacher in somebody's house for 3 years. He left his family for 3 years. And at the end of the 3 years, he came to the boss. He was, you know, time finished. He was going home. And he said, please pay me. He said, I don't have.
I have the money.
Give me fruits. I don't have. Give me land. I don't have. Give me this. Whatever he said, I don't have. So he went home empty-handed. You heard it from God.
I thought
he was a farmer. Anyway, so a few days later, the guy comes with a wagon load of stuff. And he said, there's a story in the Gemara. He said, what did you think when I said I have no money? He was a rich guy. The boss was a rich guy. He said, what did you think when I said I have no money? He said, I thought you had no cash flow. He said, what happens when I said I didn't have it? He said, maybe you didn't tithe him yet. And he found an excuse for the landlord, for the boss, why he didn't pay him. And he said, I swear to God, whatever you said was right. And he gave him more than he deserved. Because he trusted him and he believed him. So the Gemara says these dinim apply only if the person has the money and he doesn't give it. But if he doesn't have the money, he's not transgressing.
How is it that someone could hire someone and not have the money to pay them?
Happens all the time.
Come on.
Business is bad.
You're not in the business world.
Happens all the time.
But is that okay?
Sometimes people have low cash flow.
If he tells him ahead of time, listen, I'm not going to pay you tonight. So
a lot of teachers in the schools don't get paid on time.
That's true.
Come on. In fact, there's an interesting question that Rebbe asks in the Sikh, a very interesting question. God keeps mitzvahs. It says, Magid Varov Liyakov, Chukov Umishpatov, his laws, his statutes. So the Medrash says, Medrash in Tillim says, Yeshmi Shuhu Metzava Lacherim Lases, Avahu Eina Isa. There are people, they tell everybody to do so, but they don't do it themselves. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Hashem, Mashu Metzava Lacherim Lases, Hu Isa. Whatever he tells the Jews to do, he does. And therefore it's called his mitzvahs, his chukim. Vince Gemara says, God puts on tefillin. God does all the mitzvahs that a Jew does. God does. Okay, now. So the question is, the commentators ask this question, that why doesn't God pay us for the work we do mitzvahs? God should pay us daily.
You get in the world to come.
Yeah, but the question is, you can't wait. God has to pay us now. So the answer is, well, there's a very interesting, simple answer is, that in the middle of the day you don't work, you don't pay the guy. You pay him when he's done. We're not done. After 120 years, when we're ready to go, that's when we're done, and that's when God pays us. So he doesn't not keep the mitzvah. He keeps the mitzvah, except we're in the middle of work. So we're in the middle of work. He can't, he doesn't have to pay us yet. Okay, so he says, Bechlal is brought down, he brings down over here also, that it's proper that if you hire workers, you should make sure that you have money to pay him. And by the way, you have to pay him the whole payment. Let's say you owe the guy $100, and you pay him $99, you're also transgressing the negative commandment. Now, you don't get lashes, you don't get whipped for this mitzvah, because even though it's a negative commandment, but you only get punishment. We're going to get to Malchus, I don't know if we'll get there today, but we should. Only if you do an action. Like the Torah says, don't eat pig, you eat pig. So you did an action. But there's what's called a lav she'ein bo ma'aseh, a negative commandment that there's no action to it, you can't get whipped. Right? Like the Torah says, don't leave the meat over of the sefer till the morning. If you leave it over, you didn't do anything. You did not do something. But you didn't do anything. So the same thing, this, if you don't pay the worker, you didn't do anything actively. Like you didn't eat the chazer, you didn't speak lashon, you didn't do something active. It's passive. On passive commandments, you don't get
what? It does take into account your inability.
Yeah, that's what he said. If you can't, you can. Or the same thing applies in the post can bring down. You gave a garment to a tailor to fix. So as long as the garment is stole by the tailor, you don't have to pay him. But as soon as you pick it up, you have an obligation to pay him, even in the middle of the day. He finished his job. You have to pay him right away. That's the dinim that apply over here. Okay, now it's an interesting thing. The Mefarshim say, the word b'yomo titein schorei, the first three words of Pasuk Tezvav, b'yomo titein schorei, is an acronym of Shabbos. B'yomei titein schorei is shin beisav, right? You have the three, is Shabbos. What does it mean? So it says, if a person works hard in learning Torah during the week, so then he gets a special neshama for Shabbos, and therefore, every day, he gains from what he did. So, you merit, some people, he says, you can get an extra neshama every day. Because a scholar is called Shabbos in the Gemara. The Gemara tells a story, a scholar in the Gemara once came to the village, and one of the rabbis got dressed up in his Shabbos clothing to meet him. So he said to him, why are you getting dressed up? It's a Monday morning, like, what are you doing? He said, a scholar is called Shabbos. So he says, a person learns Torah, so then they get this extra neshama a whole week.
Every day?
And it says, interesting, he quotes from the Arizal, that if he hired a worker and he didn't have money to pay him, he would go around to everywhere collecting money, to borrowing money to pay the guy, and he wouldn't daven mincha until he paid the worker. He wouldn't daven mincha until he paid the worker. And he said, the Arizal said like this, Ech es upon el espala Hashem yizbarech. How can I go daven to God when I'm not doing this mitzvah that I have to do now? It's like you're coming to God to pray, and you're telling God, by the way, I have a mitzvah that I owe you. He said, I can't do it.
I agree.
Thank you. You're like the Arizal. But another thing that Arizal never did, by the way, he never bargained, he never haggled when it came to a mitzvah. Tefillin, Esrig, whatever it was, the price he told him, he never haggled it. Whatever the price was, he gave. B'chad, they say also the Baal Shem Tov never went to sleep at night with money in his pocket. Any money he had, we give away to tzedakah before he went to sleep. Because they didn't, they were very careful.
They didn't have much money on them,
They didn't have any money, but whatever they had, trust me.
It was precious.
But another interesting thing, it's brought down that a person, you have to pay them what you make up with them. There's a lot of court that didn't tourist with this, or court cases. You promise a guy to do a job, you promise him, or X amount of money per hour. You have to pay him the proper amount. You can't, you made up $10 an hour, you can't pay him $9 an hour, or $9.50. You have to give him the full price. And by the way, this is a very simple thing, by the way. If we pay our workers on time, we're God's workers. Right? Gemara has an expression, Anan, it's a Gemara that says, Anan, pa'ola di yamama anan. Pa'ola is the pa'ol of yom. We're day workers, the Gemara says. That's our job. We're God's day workers. God gave us a job to do. And he says, okay, I'm going to pay you. So if we pay our workers, then God pays us. If we don't pay our workers, why should God pay us?
Does it address situations where if a worker says he's expert in something, and then it turns out to be that he was a novice?
Oh, that's a lot of Gemara and Bava Metzia that discuss what happens. No, I'll give an example. A guy hired workers. No, there's a dinner. Workers will have to quit even in the middle of the day. Okay?
You have to pay him for
what? Oh, so the question is, but now let's say you hired him for, to make it easy, for 5 hours, $10 an hour, yeah? So you have to pay him $50 for the day's work. Now the guy quits after
2 hours.
But now to hire new workers is going to cost you $15 an hour. Because you find workers in the middle of the day. It's not so simple.
So, give them five,
so the question is, can you deduct it? Can you not deduct it? You know, or what happens? There's also a whole mission in the Gemara. A guy says to his shliach, guy says to his agent, hire workers for $10 an hour. Yeah? This is what he told him to do. And the shliach, for whatever reason it is, promised him 12 an hour. Who has to pay that? Now the workers are coming, they'll pay 12. That was the deal. They're accepted. Who has to pay that $2 extra per hour?
The employer.
Why? Well, he didn't tell him to do it.
Obviously the guy didn't find
it. No, so what? They said, I told you to get $10 an hour. So there's a whole, I'm saying these are all discussions in the Gemara.
The guy who made the negotiation should pay the difference.
No.
But he said, I didn't. It's not, I'm hiring them.
I couldn't find.
So the question is, Can you find? It's not so simple. The Gemara has a whole chapter of the Gemara about this stuff.
If you're making a promise on behalf of somebody else, then you should be responsible.
Correct. But not necessarily. Okay. Pasuk 16 is a very important pasuk, a very philosophical pasuk also. Lo yumsu avisal, but I'll just say the simple meaning of the pasuk before we discuss it. Lo yumsu avisal banim. Fathers should not be put to death because of sons. Ubanim lo yumsu al aves. Sons should not be put to death because of fathers. Ish becheta yumasu. Each man should die for their own sin. Now what does this pasuk mean? This pasuk is learned in a lot of different ways. For instance, Rashi learns, because there's an issue over here. Another, in the Ten Commandments, here the Torah says, Fathers will not die for sons, sons will not die for fathers, you die for your own sin. Correct? Yet in the Aseret Sedivros it says, Perkeid, Avain Oves, Al Banim, Al Bnei Banim, Al Shileshim, Al Ribeim. In the Ten Commandments it says, okay, that God remember keeps the sin
four or
five generations. For, not four or five, but three, four generations. Right? So it says over here.
But isn't Yeshayahu saying,
One minute. Here it says, Pekeda Vaina Voice, Hashem visits the sins of fathers on the children of third and fourth generations. Okay? So now the question is, seemingly it's a contradiction. Because here this pasuk over here says, each man dies for their own sins. So how do you reconcile the two things? So Rashi over here learns differently than a lot of commentaries. Rashi over here says, what does it mean? What does it mean when the Torah says, fathers will not die? It means through the testimony of a child. That means if a child testifies against the father that he killed somebody, the father will not, because he's not a kosher witness. The relative is not a kosher witness. So Rashi learns simply over here the pasuk, because of this contradiction, obviously. One pasuk says Hashem carries over the sins for four generations, and here it says each man dies for their own sin. So Rashi learns what it means is like this, that if the son testifies against the father, or a father testifies against the son, because they're relatives, they're not kosher witnesses.
But they don't know already that testimony of the relative is not...
Yeah, but that's what he's saying.
We know it already. From
We
know it already.
No, we don't know that already, by the way.
You know it. You're way ahead of
no, it doesn't say... Nowhere in the Torah does the Torah say relatives cannot be... This is the... By the way, this is the pasuk. Yeah. For those commentators that explain the pasuk the way Rashi, the way we just said it, this is the source... That you can't be a relative and testify. Because it says, a father cannot testify for a child, the child cannot testify against the father. Each bechata yumasa means, you can't have relatives. Because nowhere else in Torah, by the way, does it say relatives can't be witnesses. And it's a bechata, it's what's called gzeres hakosef, like we learned, it's illogical, it doesn't make sense, but this is what the Torah says. If Moshe and Aaron, as relatives, brothers, saw a murder, they saw a mamish guy kill somebody. The guy will not be put to death because they are not kosher witnesses. Not because they're liars, not because, even though one of the Gadabas said a very nice word. He said, why is a relative not a kosher witness? He says like this. If he's testifying for you, obviously he's a relative, he's biased. He's gonna testify for you. If your relative is testifying against you, he's an animal. And the Torah says, by witnesses, you need to have people. No, you understand? It's a chassidic word. He said, why can't a relative, he said, there's a logic behind it. If he's testifying for you, obviously he's a relative, he's biased. He's testifying against you, he's an animal, and animals can't testify.
Yeah, what kind of a relative would testify against another relative?
What world do you live in?
People have issues. They have family food.
Which world? Come on, do me a favor. Now, there's another interesting thing over here that the Ramban says. That is in the olden, and this is another thing that the Torah warns kings. In the olden times, you know, if a king, a goyish king, got angry at a certain person, he would kill out the whole family. The kids didn't do anything wrong, but that was their way in the olden days. Somebody did.
That was rational, though, because if they would call the kid would come later. To
okay, but the bottom line is that's what the kings did.
Yeah.
They would kill out the whole family. So here the Torah says, "Lo yumsu av esalbanu." You can't kill a father because a son committed a crime, or a father to kill a son because the father committed a crime. The Torah says this is a warning for kings. That's where the Ramban learns, by the way.
So, Rabbi?
What?
So how is it so that the martyrs that we talk about on Yom Kippur, didn't they die for the sins of the brothers?
Yeah. Well, there's another answer to the question which doesn't apply to them either, by the way. How do you reconcile these two psukim? One says God remembers the sins for four generations, and this passage says each man dies for his own sin. So, the Gemara explains, Rashi brings it down also, not here, but somewhere else, that if the child follows in the evil footsteps of the father, so then the sins become accumulative. But if the father is evil, or the son is good, or vice versa, so then the Torah says you don't die for your father's sins or for your son's sins, you die for your own sin. That's if you're your own person. When it says in the Aseret HaDibros in Ten Commandments, Peiket Avein Avis Albonim Al Shileshim Aribeim, refers to when they're continuing in their evil ways, so then Hashem punishes them accumulatively.
Oh,
that's the simple answer of this. Okay, but here, like we said, this is the source in the Torah, at least, that a person can only die for their own sins. They don't die for somebody else's sins.
What if, what is with Yirmiyahu's protest about Achrubose Roshinei Bani Mikhena?
The what?
Yeah?
I didn't hear it.
I'm saying Yirmiyahu protests that Avot Achrubose Roshinei Bani Mikhena.
No.
Meaning that the father's sin and then the children are to be paying the price.
Oh, so now, this is an interesting thing. The Mefashim say, the Rambam brings down, it's a very difficult thing to understand. In today's world, it wouldn't go over. The Rambam says that God kills children for the sin of the parents.
Yeah.
Why? The Rambam brings it down in Halacha. Why? He says, because children under Bar and Bar Mitzvah are not people yet of their own. They're considered the property of the parents.
Extension.
The property of the parents. And therefore, God, to punish a parent, will kill a kid, boy or girl, under Bar and Bas Mitzvah. It is God's business, though, you know, when he does it. Because it's, they are the property of the parents. Because they're not responsible for their own actions. It's only... And that's another thing, the way the commentaries explain this over here. That they're actually, you know, the property of the parents. And then even Mamleis brings it down.
That's a horrible...
No,
It's a difficult... Let's put it this way. It's just a difficult thing to understand. Well, now, your question, which is a very good question. So why did the 10 martyrs die... Who knows how many generations later for the sin that the 10 brothers sold Yosef as a slave. Because the Torah says, V'gainef ish umcharei, if you kidnap somebody and you sell them, the Torah says capital punishment, right? Therefore, when it says in the 10 commandments not to steal, loisignevu, the Gemara says, it doesn't mean not stealing simple. Because all the ones of the Ten Commandments are capital punishment. Adultery, idolatry, all that's capital punishment. So what the Gemara says, Rashi brings it down in Yisrael, that when the Torah says don't steal in the Ten Commandments, it doesn't mean stealing. That's another possibility. Sigzil. Okay? But what the Torah means is don't kidnap. Because if you kidnap somebody and you sell them, so then it's capital punishment. Okay? So because the brothers kidnapped Yosef, and they sold him as a slave to Egypt. So therefore, the 10 martyrs are supposed to get killed.
The 10 martyrs what?
Got killed. Because of the 10 Shvatim.
Avenge.
The 10 Shvatim.
So
Binyamin wasn't there, and Yosef wasn't there. I mean, Yosef was being sold. He wasn't part of it, right? So 10 brothers sold Yosef as a slave.
What did the 10 martyrs have to do with
this? Right, I'm saying, so the question, why are those 10 martyrs being tortured? But in the tefillahs that we say on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av in the Kinnis, when it was Shmuel, when these things were happening, they sent up, Rabbi Shmuel was the Kohen Gadol, sent him Tiyer Rabbi Yishmael Atmei, okay, the bus thing says he purified himself, he went up to heaven. And he asked what's going on. And it says, when the Rabbi Kiva was being killed and the 10 martyrs were being killed, the angels came to God and said, Zu Torah v'zu Schara, this is the reward for Torah, this is the reward for these holy things. And Hashem basically said, Shtaik, quiet, because if you don't shut up, I'm going to destroy the whole world. No, that's what Hashem said to them. Shtaik, because if you don't, I'm going to destroy the whole world. So it's something which is completely not understood. Because L'Chayr, according, and the Mefarshim talk about this, you know, they didn't do these sins, why do they deserve to die?
And right.
But there's the Gilgul of Neshamis, there's Neshamis, and they, you know, some people say the 10 brothers with these 10 tzaddikim in the Neshamis, came into Gilgul in them. And there's a lot of issues that could be that we don't understand how Hashem works. But yeah, in a simple thing, it doesn't make sense, because why are they dying for something that forefathers committed and they didn't follow in those footsteps?
Why?
There's no answer to the question.
I learned from this that God has an attitude just like us.
Yeah, a little bit better though.
When he gets cornered and he doesn't have anything to answer, he says, shut up, we're
God
out.
Is here right now listening to you, so kindly control your thoughts.
Yeah. It's not exactly like you're saying, but, yeah.
Control your speech, I'm telling you. Respect your creator. I'm sorry. I'm saying it first.
I appreciate it.
Okay, now. The question is like this. The Mefarshim ask also a question. The pasuk begins plural and ends singular. It says, lo yumsu, plural. And then it says, ish bechet ei, each man of his own sin, which is singular, lashon yachid. So he says the expression, pasach, where is this? Here. The Torah begins Lashon Yochid and signs Lashon Rabim, Ish Bechata Yumasu. Or even the word Ish Bechata Yumas should be. I'm sorry, not beginning and end. The Pasuk says Ish Bechata Yumasu. It should Ish Bechata Yumas.
Or Anashim
Bechata. Right, whichever way it is. Okay. Now, like we said before, if the son follows up, so then it's 4 generations. And it says, Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Paiked Aved Avos 4 generations." Yecheskel says, "Anefesh Chetas Hitomus." Okay, so it says like this: that there's a story in the Gemara. So I'm saying, so it says, "Ish Bechata Yumasu," because it actually goes when the son is following the footsteps of the father. So then, the father and the son are dying through this death. You know, the son may be sinning, but it's accumulative of the earlier 3 generations. So the Torah says it might be bechetai, but yumasu means they're all dying through this kid. And they're all going through this. Okay, next. Let's start this. Now the Torah also goes to the human nature of things. A judge has to judge properly. He can't have, like it says, there's 2 extremes over here. Not in this pasuk, in a different pasuk. One pasuk says, Leisakiru panim b'mishpat, beginning of Parsha Shaftim. Mm-hmm. Let's say a rich guy is coming to a trial. You can't say, oh, he's rich, how can I embarrass him, he's powerful. The Torah says, Leisakiru panim b'mishpat. No, but it could be the opposite way too. A widow, a orphan comes to a court, you might say, you know, it's a pity on them. How can I hurt them?
Or that he's a rich, he can afford the law.
Whatever the case is, whatever, in either way. So here the Torah says like this, Leisata mishpat ger yosim. You're not allowed to turn, or it says pervert the judgment of a ged or an orphan. A ged is also like a newcomer to Judaism. You have to be afraid. And you cannot take the garment of a widow as a pledge. Remember, we learned that before, that not at the time of the loan. But later on, if you want to take collateral after they don't pay you, you're not allowed to take. And by the way, the din of Almana is very interesting. She could be a very wealthy widow.
Really?
The fact is she's a widow, the Torah says no.
No what? You defer to her.
No, you can't take collateral of her garments as collateral. You can't take her things as collateral. Not at the time. At the time of the loan, you're allowed to. But what happens, you lent her $1,000 and she's not paying you back. It comes the time of the loan, so you want to take collateral. So you can't take it from a widow. Even if she's a wealthy widow. Because she still has a din of a widow. Yeah, but he says you're not allowed to pervert it in any other way. Because it's a pity on the butt. From the other side, you can't go against them, and yet you can't turn it for them either. You can't say, oh, they're up against a rich guy, you know, they're widows and orphans, let's make them. Either way, you can't. You can't say, then who cares about them and the orphans? So if they lose, they lose. Who cares? Nobody's going to care about them. Either way, the Torah says you can't pervert the judgment. The judgment has to be
fair and just.
And that's why he says, why? The Torah says the reason, because you guys should know better. You guys were slaves in Egypt. God redeemed you from there. So because you were persecuted as strangers, you know what persecution is all about. Therefore, I'm commanding you to do this. Okay? But the question is like this. The Mefarshim ask a very simple question. God says, I'm commanding you to do this. He's not commanding you to do this. He's commanding you, don't pervert the judgment. Don't take the garment of a widow. See, he's not saying, do it. On the contrary, he's telling you not to do things. So why does the Torah say, I'm commanding you to do. What is he commanding us to do? If anything, he's commanding us not to do. Not to take the garment. Not to pervert the judgment. So the Mefarshim explained very simple. What happens if he took it? He wasn't allowed to, but he took it. So the God says you have a mitzvah to give it back.
Yeah.
You have to do, meaning you have to give it back. Give it back.
You get a mitzvah for that.
Yeah.
No?
Well, no, you're just rectifying the sin that you did. Just your vector. Okay, we're stopping anyway. Okay.
That's it.
That's it.